Andy Noble, thanks for talking to me.
Yeah.
You have had a long, even though you're still young, in the blush of youth, but a long career in music and in various forms of music. As a musician?
Yeah.
You owned a record store?
Yeah.
With your brothers?
Right.
And now you're doing some music licensing, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Are you born and raised in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many brothers do you have?
Two brothers.
Two brothers?
Yep.
Musical family?
Fairly. My parents were art dealers.
Okay.
So that was our first thing. But my mom's employees, I guess, were at her art galleries. They were just a lot of musicians. And this would have been around, like, the early 80s, so it was kind of like the punk new wave boom from Milwaukee.
Right. Right.
Around that time, you know, we're getting things a little late. And so a lot of her employees were into that kind of stuff, and so and my mom was really open-minded. She was maybe 5 to 10 years older than most of her employees, but she was kind of got that whole late 70s, early 80s cultural music thing through the employees, and she was open-minded to it.
Right.
So, you know, beginning of hip-hop, disco, good disco, black disco type stuff, and also going into new wave, punk, ska, things like that. Like, she was bringing records like that home all the time.
Okay.
And so we heard a lot of different stuff. They weren't musicians per se, but they were really open-minded to, having now gone through a lot of different parents' record collections through my, you know, day job is basically a record digger. I can say my parents' record collection would have been exceptional.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Good. So music, it was in the house all the time.
Yeah, they were always playing records.
So your earliest musical memory is probably in the cradle.
Yeah, playing records at home. My mom was really into, like, taking us to the store and letting us buy records for ourselves and pick out records.
Right. 45s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. I knew a guy when I was in college in Ann Arbor who hardly talked at all, but he carried, like, stacks of 45s, and if he wanted to say something to you, he'd go through his collection and give you a 45. That was the message he wanted to convey at that time.
That's funny. That's interesting. Yeah, there's 45s is a thing. It's one of the things. Like, it's a man thing. It's like a weakness in our genetic code or something.
Is it a man thing, not a girl thing?
There is women into it, but I mean, I would say it's got to be 300 to 1.
Right.
Easy.
How many 45s do you have in your...
I try to keep my personal collection kind of trim, and I kind of try to keep it, like, you know, like, everything that's in there is in there for a reason.
Right.
If there's something I don't need, you know, you have to have rules. So my collection's probably, like, 3,000 or 4,000 45s, which sounds like a lot, but it's not. Like, those are small, so it doesn't take up that much space. But then, I mean, I have a business, too, and I probably have 10,000 45s that are part of the business.
So the record store was called, what was it called?
Lotus Land Records.
Lotus Land Records. It's no longer, right?
No, that's been gone for two or three years now.
But you continue to be, what do you call, just call a record digger?
I really wish there was an umbrella term for what I do right now, but I do look for records every day.
Right.
I do buy and sell records every day.
On the internet?
On the internet, in person, to friends, to foes, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I'm still, like, a lot of those records that I'm finding are still for my personal collection, too. Some of those are for just private consumption. Some of those are for a collection, you know, like, maybe inside, in my collection are collections. So you would say this is the Milwaukee Gospel, you know, independent label gospel box. So
right.
I have a box full of just gospel 45s from Milwaukee, released on independent labels. And so, you know, maybe something I find today might go into that box.
And is that where you lean toward? Do you lean towards local Milwaukee stuff primarily?
I do. It's one of my focuses. With Milwaukee and local stuff, I think it transcends. There's a couple reasons for that. I'm not really this Mr. Civic duty guy.
Okay.
I respect the idea of that, but naturally I'm a little too selfish and on my own weird tangent of life to I think take that kind of civic responsibility. Although I will say, I'm probably one of the only people in a position to find a lot of these things, and so I do feel a sense of civic responsibility to say I'm going to complete to have a physical embodiment of every, you know, black music release that came out of Milwaukee. Because I'm the guy. I mean, no one else is going to do it. No one else
right.
is like, they're not going to see the stuff that I see doing what I do. Like, I do it every day, and I've done it for years.
Right.
And so I do feel like there's a certain sense of responsibility to say, I would like to have a library of that stuff. I do offer it out, you know, to MSC. Like, I did a show last year on MSC, and once in a while I'll do these things where you can say, here it is. And, right. And it's not my curated version of something or anything like that. I can say, this is everyone I've found,
right.
You know,
right.
That I've ever found in my travels.
Right.
You know, good, bad, beat up, cracked in half, there's all of them.
Well, now, Milwaukee has kind of a really interesting musical history that tends to go overlooked a little bit. I mean, it goes back to, well, Grafton. Didn't they used to come up from...
Are you talking about Paramount?
Yeah.
Yeah, Paramount's story is really strange. It doesn't have much to do with Milwaukee's story. Paramount's story is like... It's fascinating, but it doesn't have much to do with us. Like, Paramount was a furniture factory that... Back then, it's just like the furniture led to... Stereos were basically more furniture back then. Anyone who's just got a hi-fi in the basement still can attest to that. So basically, they were a furniture company turned record player company turned record company because they wanted to sell people record players. Then they wanted to sell them the records to play on them. And then a couple guys there had the idea that they realized they were so close to Chicago that one of the big selling record, you know, styles of records back then was Race Records, which was the beginning of the black music industry.
Right.
And so Paramount went down to Chicago and started pulling up artists to come to record at the furniture factory. And
this is back in the days where if you were a black person in Grafton, you were like the only one.
Yeah, although I've heard stories relayed about that where they said they were treated really well. You know, they were basically driven up by the A&R guys who worked for Paramount, recorded and then driven back.
Okay.
And that was some massive records there, like the Blind Willie Johnson record. One of the ones that got made there is one of the ones that went... I'm not... This isn't my era, so I'm... Forgive any listeners, forgive me for the actual details on this. But they sent some music up into space in the 70s, and it was kind of a famous thing.
Right.
And I think they only sent three or four recordings, and they were mostly like, you know, Beethoven, Mozart, things like that. But they actually sent, his recording, Willie Johnson, which I think it was like Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground.
No kidding.
Really amazing piece of music, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard it a long time ago.
It's totally amazing.
So you don't think of that necessarily as your era. So
I've been concentrating on is I guess it would be 60s through late 80s, which would to me means it's basically what I find. Okay, like I didn't really choose my era. It's basically my era chose me by what's out there.
Right.
I mean, do I find 78s that predate what I'm interested in? Yeah, a little bit, but I've never found like those Paramount Blues 78s in the streets of Milwaukee. When I'm finding 78s digging around the north side of Milwaukee, it's usually white ones that were left there when white flight happened. So when the white flight phenomena happened and all the white people, you know, left and went to the suburbs, really heavy record collections, and anybody who's carried a box of 78s before knows how heavy those are.
Right.
That kind of stuff tend to get left in the attics and the basements. And so a lot of times when I go and look at those kind of records on the north side in black neighborhoods now, it's white music from the 50s. It will usually be kind of like big band, Dixieland type white, you know, popular artists. I don't see those pre-war blues 78s. No, I've never actually seen them ever.
Right. Well, there aren't too many.
I've seen them at record shows and stuff. I've never seen them on the streets. So basically, my record digging has been more about what I find, and
what
so
you're able
I'm
to
interested
find.
In what I find and the more interesting parts of what I find.
Well, musically, that seems to be a remarkably well. I don't know. I don't know enough about the music scene, but that seems to be a remarkably fertile time in terms of music history or popular music history.
Yeah, well, I think what happened there is, one, the 45 format, it being a really, really cheap and really, really effective way to just get like exactly, like it was a great buyer-driven market because you would hear one song on the radio or have one artist that you like, and you could buy just that song and for like a really cheap amount of money. Like the record industry hadn't figured out yet that they could convolute the whole process of that by selling you a whole bunch of songs that you didn't care about, you know, and charging you more money so you could more or less get the one song you wanted.
But also the nice thing about 45s is, and I mean, a college kid or a high school kid, you could afford it.
Yeah, they were really, really cheap. Even really poor kids. Like, I mean, these record collections that I go through were bought by kids in the ghetto, you know, that were probably, you know, one of eight or nine kids in a family, and they could still afford to buy those.
Right.
You know, I mean, when I look at these Soul 45 collections, it's just like people bought them when they were kids, in the ghetto, and they could afford to buy a few every Saturday or whatever, right. You know? So, I mean, usually they bought records by the people who were famous or who they saw in Soul Train or, you know, things like that. So usually you see Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and things like that. What was interesting, though, about that time is that beyond, you know, looking at it from the consumer standpoint is one thing, and it was great for them. You could buy just the song you heard on the radio that you liked for a really cheap price and play it as many times as you wanted. That was really great. Looking at it from the other side of things, like the business side and the producers of the music, you had the first independent producer, record owner heroes. You know, you had people like, you know, at Sun Records, and you had Berry Gordy at Motown. And Motown, people could look up to these people and say, hey, that was just a guy who organized the talent from the neighborhood and became a millionaire off it. And so what happened was...
He's just like me.
He's just like them. So basically, your idea of the inner city entrepreneur, like, became a reality in the late 50s and early 60s. And so basically, more than anybody knows, even now in this world information-packed age we live in, there was just so many people tried to take a stab at becoming the next Berry Gordy or whatever. So what we're left with now is this legacy of like a million wannabe either copycat artists or, I mean, anything. Like, there's just so many documents of really interesting history that came out of these independent productions, you know? And it was fairly cheap for them back then to go into the studio and cut two sides, put out a small run 45 of it, promo it out, try to get nightclub gigs, try to get played on the radio stations, things like that, you know? I mean, and so basically there's all these documents now of most of them didn't succeed.
Right.
Some of them did. But now it's fascinating to look through it.